I mean, one of the things that struck me, you know, because we've mentioned Mary Antin's story, and it's kind of like, I think in a classroom context, is that that story is great in the initial sense in order to get the children to care about what they're studying. But then you're absolutely right that what Tony's talking about is that the how and why those narratives are constructed in the way that they're constructed. So Antin's autobiography is serving a very particular set of purposes because of the context of America at that particular time. And we need to allow students to move beyond the testimony to actually see where the testimony fits in terms of discourse. And I wonder whether, you know, for example, having comparative, that could be quite an interesting sort of way, but you take two testimonies from two different contexts. So while this is happening, here's a testimony of a migrant in the context of the Aliens Act of 1905 in Britain. Why is it different? You know, why are the reasons different here? And that could drive them to start to think about, yes, they're caring. We've humanized these stories by giving them people, but we're also sort of saying that even these stories serve particular purposes, and we're opening up in terms of thinking about the context, because that would be really valuable. And then thinking about, well, what are the stories we're getting currently about migrants, and what's the context that's framing those particular stories, might be really, really valuable and useful.
I think I do try and get students to compare testimony from 1900s to mid-20th century to now, and see, you know, what narrative strategies they, you know, and thinking about audience and reception and context. And sometimes there are interesting parallels as well as differences, and they can get them to start to see, of, especially also when you're looking at, say, reactions to refugees and migrants as well, of what are the anxieties of the time. So, you know, in that sense, there are parallels of the 1900s and the early 21st century. People are anxious, and some of that anxiety is being focused on migrants, but is there something underneath that? And that, you know, sometimes looking at attitudes to migration are very revealing, not just in themselves, but of wider concern. Returning to the issue of representation, although it's on a very blatant level, I do start one of my courses by looking at two, I suppose, very different ways, iconic images from the last few years. One of them, the photographs of the three-year-old Alan Kurdi, and why it was this image that seemed to change the discourse, certainly in Germany, if not so much in Britain, of what caught the imagination, why this, you know, relatively obscure newspaper image became so widely circulated and so influential. And then on the other extreme, and not far apart from it chronologically, the Breaking Point poster, and which, you know, in its way gets them to think about age and gender and threats, and why certain people, a set of people, are regarded as a menace and others regarded as deserving, and why it was at that particular moment with Alan Kurdi that it suddenly, there have been other tragic moments, much bigger ones in a way, but it was that particular image that struck a chord. And I think visual imagery is something that, you know, has to be used very sensitively, and with the Kurdi one, there are inevitably issues of ethics involved with that. But it can get the students also to think about what is appropriate to show and what isn't. Why were they framed in this particular way? And that brings in sort of memory as well. So I think all of these things, again, you could say, well, that's a luxury of higher education, but I don't think so. I think it's something that students can really engage with. And I think particularly the visual, perhaps unfortunate, but there is an enormous amount of visual material relating to migrants and refugees, often hostile. And likewise, something that I think I will struggle at because of my generation, but I've learned a lot from students about how they use social media as a research tool to look at attitude. And it's something that isn't part of my everyday life, but is very much there. So I'm still sort of one of the rare people that reads a newspaper in physical form. But they don't, but they have access to so much material that is slightly alien to me. So again, that can be used. The debates are taking place in social media.